Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm delighted to have with me today on University Matters on Campus FM, Dr. Neville Vassallo. Dr. Vassallo is a senior lecturer within the Department of Physiology and Biochemistry and here at the university in the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery. He graduated as a medical doctor in 1995 from the medical school here at the university. After obtaining his medical warrant in 1997, he joined the Department of Physiology and Biochemistry as an assistant lecturer to embark upon an academic research-oriented career. He read for a PhD in neurophysiology and neurochemistry jointly at the University of Malta and the Institute of Neuropathology at the Ludwig Maximilians University of Munich in Germany. The LMU is a recognized center of research excellence in neurodegenerative diseases in Europe. Later, he also carried out valuable postgraduate research training at the Institute. Dr. Vassallo currently heads a research team at the Department of Physiology and Biochemistry, which focuses on studying neurodegenerative diseases, disorders like Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease at the molecular and cellular level. Their research aims at using robust molecular screens to identify novel small molecule inhibitors, including bioactive compounds from terrestrial and marine plants that would help stave off such brain diseases. And I'm sure Dr. Vassallo will be explaining that to us during our talk. He has published several academic papers in international peer-reviewed journals. He's also editor of two books in the field of experimental medicine and biology. His international collaborators include the Institute of Neuropathology in Munich, the German Center for Neurodegenerative Disease Research, the Department of Preventive Medicine of the University of Paris, and several others. Dr. Vassallo is a member of the American Physiological Society, a member of the American Chemical Society, and member of the Federation of European Neuroscience Societies. Welcome to the program, Dr. Vassallo.
Thank you very much.
I always like to give a little bit of a detailed bio because I think it's important that our listeners get to know our researchers and our academics better, and explaining your development, your academic development, helps to explain who you are and of course what you're doing. Today we're going to talk, as your bio suggested, about neurodegenerative diseases. That's the research work which you carry out. Perhaps as an opening to our talk, you could explain to our listeners exactly what you mean by neurodegenerative diseases and mention perhaps a few which I know are very topical.
Thank you very much for your invitation to this program and for your nice introduction. As you correctly said, our work features on neurodegenerative diseases. What do we mean by neurodegeneration? It means when neurons die, dying of neurons, nerves or nerve cells, okay? Dying of nerve cells. Nerve cells die, they can die in the brain, they can die in the spinal cord, okay? They can sever in the nervous system in general. So there are many types of neurodegenerative diseases. Typically, perhaps the most common and known to people are Alzheimer's disease, where you have nerve cells that are dying in the brain, and these nerve cells are involved in memory. So basically you have a loss of, you start losing memory. Another very common neurodegenerative disease is Parkinson's disease, where you have nerve cells dying, and these are nerve cells again in the brain, but in a different area of the brain, which is involved in movement. Then there are others. You have motor neuron disease, in which you have dying nerve cells, but these nerve cells are now in the spinal cord. So you have paralysis, basically, a progressive paralysis. You have another one, Huntington's disease, in which, again, you have nerve cells dying, and again, these are involved in an area similar to the one involved in Parkinson's, actually, okay, what we call the basal ganglia. And there are many others, but perhaps these are most commonly
familiar with,
exactly, and in fact the ones that we are doing research on.
Mm-hmm. Would these diseases be age related? I mean, normally we look at Alzheimer's,
yes,
and we think older people,
exactly,
but
yes.
Is it always like, mm-hmm, that, or
typically they are, in the sense that age increases the risk of nerve cells dying. You have things like oxidative stress in this so age increases. However, they can be inherited, so there is a genetic component to practically all of these diseases. So sometimes you get young people getting Parkinson's or getting Alzheimer's or getting whatever. So although age is definitely a factor, and we say DJ, however, there can also be a strong genetic component. What is particularly interesting about this whole topic, and which is the focus of our research actually, is that although they seem to be very different diseases, you have Alzheimer's affecting memory, Parkinson's affecting movement, motor paralysis, so but when you look, so they're actually different, they're neurological, but different diseases. But when you look at what's happening at the cellular level, at the level of the cell, at the level of the molecules, you find a common thing happening in all of these diseases. And this common thing is what we call the protein aggregation. So, you know, cells are filled with molecules called proteins, and in each of these diseases, a particular protein, a different protein, not the same one, but a different protein, it misfolds, so it forms a knot, like, let's, so imagine a three-dimensional, like, snake-like structure, molecule, which folds abnormally, it forms like a knot, and it starts sticking, and these, they start sticking to each other, these knots, they start sticking to each other, and they deposit in the brain or in the nervous system. And when they deposit, they cause death of the cell. So in Parkinson's disease, you see these deposits. In fact, they are called Lewy bodies due to the person who had discovered them, Lewy, who was incidentally in Munich. He discovered them in this, which will tie with another topic which we are going to talk about. Alzheimer found the plaques, the famous plaques in brains. They'll see these plaques represent deposits of a particular protein. In Huntington's disease, you had deposits of a protein called Huntington. In motor neuron disease, you have deposits of another, of a sodium. Another. So that is extremely interesting. So there seems to be a common mechanism for these. And one of our interesting areas of research is to try to study more, identify this, how these aggregates of Alzheimer's, aggregates of Parkinson's, etc., how do they exert their toxicity? How do they kill the nerve? Because that is still not clear. How do they actually kill the nerve cells?
And what kind of research do you do? You do laboratory-based research here at the university. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we spoke, mm-hmm, about international collaborators. Mm-hmm. How does the research itself actually work?
Look, here we do definitely laboratory protocol, laboratory-based, in the sense the work I lead is in vitro, so it's based on molecules, cells, so we don't do research on animals, for instance. So what we do is we replicate the disease process in the laboratory. For instance, so we get these proteins, we get them, I'm saying, by either by purchasing them or by from our collaborators, in fact. Okay, so we get these proteins, we induce these proteins to misfold, to aggregate, so to mimic the disease process. Obviously in the brain it may take 20 years to happen. I mean, the lab it occurs in a couple of hours, okay? All right, so we accelerate that. And then we have the cells on one hand, we have the aggregates on the other hand, and we start putting our aggregates on the cells and see the effects and things like cells. We use, obviously, nerve cell types, I said, so to be relevant to our disease mechanism. Obviously, the collaboration with the University of Munich, I maintained, as you correctly mentioned, I did a significant part of my PhD studies there at the LMU. And I was determined, I came back to keep a very close collaboration with them. And I can say that they were happy to do that. And we've collaborated very well with them. So there are some areas, so we decide sort of how to divide, split the research. So we carry out this type of research. We have now our niche areas, which we have like an expertise on mitochondria, on electrophysiology, etc., which we carry out here, and then they carry out different aspects, and then we publish together. And that is very nice. Okay, in fact, most of my publications are co-authored with them. As a group, and this the talk I was invited to give in Munich, in fact, came really out of this collaboration, which has now it's been since practically 2008, very close collaboration.
In fact, one of the reasons that we got in contact really was this important seminar, the Munich Cluster for Systems Neurology. Mm-hmm. To which, as you say, you were invited to give up a paper. I think you'd better read the title of the paper yourself, otherwise I might pronounce it wrongly. But it was obviously revealing your research.
It's okay. So in Munich, they have formed what they're calling Synergy, Munich Cluster for Systems Neurology. So they decided to give a new tech, sort of, a new approach to research on these neurological diseases by having, rather than compartmentalizing research, so we have the biochemistry on their own, the people who do research on the animals on their own, the clinicians on their own. They wanted a holistic approach, so to bring these people together. They form this cluster from their very strong infrastructure. So in Munich, they have the Ludwig Maximilian University. They have another Technical University of Munich, which are the two big universities there. Then there are Max Planck Institutes, which are world renowned. So we have the Max Planck Institute for Biochemistry, the Max Planck Institute for Molecular Psychiatry. Then there's the Genetic Helmholtz Center of Munich. So they decided to combine these together, make a program which sort of will join, so they synergize basically their and not overlap so prevent overlap of research and things like that.
This is the modern approach.
To
how easy is it to do,
and but interestingly also supported it. Not just saying, okay, on paper we're going to join these universities. No, they're making a new research building, which is going to house these collaborative researchers. They created also a Synergy junior professorships. So to encourage, again, these young academic researchers to take up roles the important thing of this is that they have to be interdisciplinary, obviously. And they created, interestingly, especially for me, since I have a clinical background, okay, so I can be described as a clinical scientist, sort of, in a way. But they created, in fact, and because perhaps one advantage, inverted commas perhaps, but one advantage of a clinician is that you have already exposure, you see patients, you know, okay, you have exposure to the whole of, you know, the whole of medicine, so, you know, you don't see just brain and the neuron, so you can see it more. They created clinician scientists, posts for clinician scientists, so to encourage, again, clinicians who have a strong interest in doing research to go into research. Okay, so they are supporting this initiative by creating posts, by building infrastructure, okay,
not just
by strong fund, exactly, and by funding. And this is, I think, really what research needs. There are three pillars on which research. You need the people, obviously, to do the research. You need the infrastructure. You need the equipment. You need the labs, and you need the funding for consumables. Without any of these three, you can't have. You can't have just people with a building, because they're going to stare at each other. You can't have the building without the people. You need these three together. And I think that's what we should strive to have.
When you say holistically, mm-hmm. in an interdisciplinary way, I mean, these are quite buzzwords nowadays, okay. when you talk about research. Can you translate it into action and examples for us?
interdisciplinary in the sense that these diseases can be tackled, like from the genetic point of view. So you have groups which are looking at their genetic basis, how the genes interact with the environment, etc. You can have groups looking research into the biochemical basis, just the biochemical, so like we do. Okay, so you can have then other researchers doing work in animals, so they look in vivo, so they give compounds in vivo, etc. You then have other chemical scientists, like or pharmacologists, who work on designing compounds. But now, those who design the compounds, their compounds have to, for instance, penetrate into the brain, reach a certain concept, so they have to make use of the expertise of those who work in vivo. Those who work in vivo, the compound has to have a mechanism of action, it has to work on molecules, on cells, so they have to turn to their colleagues that work in vitro, who have a more clear mechanistic understanding of how this compound will work, etc. So you need all three again, okay? So that is really, in concrete terms, what we mean by holistic. And you need to develop. What is the final aim? The aim is to develop drugs which are going to ameliorate, which are what we call disease-modifying drugs. In Alzheimer's, and it's amazing, in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, the drugs that are generally available, commonly available, they are symptomatic. They treat just the symptoms. They do not delay disease progression. Okay, so they improve a lot of people. They feel better, but they do not have an impact on actually delaying the disease. So the search is on for to find actual disease. So in order to have a disease modifying effect, you have to know what's happening in the disease itself. So what are you going to modify? You have to modify some form of mechanism. Okay, so this has to tie in with this type of basic research on the mechanism. As I said, there is a very strong need for to develop type drugs for neuro medicines for neuro. Now, when I say drugs, I'm saying obviously medical drugs.
In fact, I was going to ask you about that because in the little bit of reading, obviously, I did, I'm trying to prepare a bit for the interview. It's mentioned that looking at plants. These are areas that perhaps were not looked into so much before, and also, as you mentioned, looking at environmental issues as well. Mm-hmm. So plants and environment, which perhaps weren't. Mm-hmm.
I can talk perhaps a bit about another very important aspect of our research, which is not only to discover the mechanism, but to find compounds which can inhibit the cells of the death of the nerve cells. And we look at, I like to use the expression, Mother Nature's drug cabinet. Okay, so there are thousands upon thousands of compounds which you find in plants in nature. Looking at the history of medicine, really, a lot of them have been found to be useful in various human diseases, or taxol from cancer, etc. There, digoxin comes from a plant and it's used in heart. So there's a whole list of drugs which we use, which originally came from plants. There's also the issue that there are several epidemiological studies based on populations which have shown a beneficial effect of things like a Mediterranean diet and a diet rich in fruits like berries and consumption of tea, etc. On these, on either Alzheimer's, on Parkinson's, etc. There are very strong studies about these. So we took that as a sort of in starting point, and we are looking at compounds which we call polyphenols. Okay, this class of compounds which are ubiquitous in plants and in plant-derived beverages, like even red wine, for instance, tea, berries. So we don't look at the berry, we look at the compounds which we find in these polyphenols. And we study them in our essay. So as I mentioned, in fact, in your introduction, we carry out these various screening essays to see how these interact with our, for instance, whether they prevent, more specifically, whether, for instance, they prevent the clamping. We mentioned the clamping in the beginning, that these proteins, they clamp, and one test that we did, for instance, whether they can prevent the clamping of these proteins. One thing that we are doing a lot of research on, and which was the topic of my talk, in fact, there in Munich, is we study amyloid membrane interactions. Amyloid refers to these aggregates, they are called amyloid aggregates. Membranes is basically the membrane of a nerve cell, is the outer shell, sort of. So we are looking into the mechanism of that these aggregates, once they form, they damage the nerve cells by attacking its outer shell, so breaking sort of its outer defense. And we are finding compounds that, again, naturally derived compounds, that very effectively block this interaction. So that was in fact the topic of my talk.
And it was well received by your colleagues?
Very much so. It was a very nice experience. Again, true to the title, which is synergy, and the holistic approach, there were different types. There were clinicians, there were neuroscientists, there were different like background specialties, and you get bombarded at the end, in fact, by questions either from the very specific expert neuroscience field, or questions from the clinical field.
It was quite daunting.
So actually, and the Germans, are really
very particular.
But it was I actually enjoyed it, because this type of interaction, it showed first of all that it was interesting. So they found the topic, this amyloid membrane interactions that we are pursuing here. So again, this is sort of our niche area. They found it very interesting, and the idea of my talk was not to go too much on the molecular aspect, but to link it also with clinical aspects, etc. So again, because of the audience it was very, very well accepted, and in fact probably they will invite me again in the future to give them another update on our work.
Perhaps you could, you said you're a clinician, you can't come from a clinical background. When you were doing that kind of work, what can you say about the incidence of neurodegenerative diseases in Malta? Do we have any statistics?
Okay, as I said, our research is lab-based, so we don't actually get their information from patients, etc. and such. But mentioning patients, the incidence is on the increase, definitely, like Alzheimer's disease.
But is that an age-related?
That is in relation to aging, definitely. To tie in with your question as well, one recent. I had the pleasure of giving a talk on our research to the Malta Parkinson's Disease Association. Invited me to give a talk on there, and they were, when they got to know from a newspaper, I believe, that there's someone at the University of Malta doing research on Parkinson's disease, they were obviously very interested to know about. So at first I was, to be honest, hesitant to take it up, in the sense that how can you expect? Pretty difficult. Obviously, the audience going to be patients with Parkinson's disease. So, and it's quite daunting for a scientist to read. But I decided to take up the challenge, and I can say it was one of the best experiences as a talk. They were so interested, and in fact, in my stay, I told them, I think this, I am giving this lecture, this talk, to the people who want to hear it most. So to the people who are really most going to be directly involved with to whom it matters most, to whom our research matters most. And it's amazing. They start asking you about certain details, and they were very, very, I was very pleased by that. And it's like, again, talking more generally about the university, it's an example of how the university should go out of its outreach to.
One of the things we were talking about before we came on air was the fact that the importance of funding. Mm-hmm. We've just got a minute left, but I think perhaps that's an important point to make with regard to research.
Very, very much. I mean, perhaps if I had my message, my idea is this. When you look at the top performing countries, economically now, I mean, not on this, economically, we mentioned Finland, we mentioned Sweden, we mentioned Netherlands, we mentioned Germany, we mentioned Denmark, which aren't all of them large countries, by the way. Germany, obviously, is a very large country, but Denmark, for instance, isn't. Okay, so, however, these are economically the undoubtedly lowest unemployment, research. When you look at the statistics of these countries on basic research, on universities, on funding of universities, they come on top as well. They have, if you had research papers, for example, per capita, you have Finland, one of the highest, Sweden, one of the highest. Research papers per capita, okay, so per capita population. If you had to look on, innovators, okay, the innovation leaders, are Sweden, Denmark, Germany, and Finland.
The same countries cropping up every
so
time.
So there is what basically there is a tie, a close link. It's not just, I have to say, it's not only tourism is obviously, like, say, for example, very important, and there are, but research and funding for university research is very mm-hmm. important. And this is not just so that we have things to play with, and this is for
practical an academic
research. And if I may just finish on this, the team I collaborate with, okay, they are also testing their own drugs. We test the poly. They have identified a drug which they have found to be promising. Okay, so basically they have identified by doing the basic type of, in inverted commas, basic research that we do here with the molecules. What have they done? They have now marketed, they have done as the leader, the research group leader, has founded a spin-off company, Modag. He got there's a Bavarian patent alliance group, which they gave him the money so he can found this company. So he founded this company, he's employing people, doing research, and now he's taking it to clinical trials, etc. The idea is this, spin-off. Eh? The spin-off, you can't get a spin-off out of air. You get a spin-off when you have a strong research university. Without a strong research university, you won't get spin-offs, you won't get a strong economy.
Yes. We do miracles here in research, but you still need
Definitely.
The funding. Thank you very, very much,
Dr.
Neville Vassallo, for coming to talk to us about neurodegenerative diseases today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.